This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, another fiery judicial hearing. This time, Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein was confronted about bias by FBI investigators against President Trump. Congressman Ted Poe was in the hearing. He'll give us an inside look in just a moment. And as we reported on Monday, a federal judge has ruled the Pentagon must begin recruiting transgendered people into the military beginning January 1st, 2018. As a result, the Department of Defense is rushing to train 23,000 military personnel, not for war, not to keep America safe, but to accommodate the implementation of an Obama-era policy. World Magazine reporter Evan Wilt and our own Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin will weigh in on that story. The website, TonyPerkins.com, find out lots of information there. In fact, if you miss anything on your way home, it'll all be archived there at TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T. Perkins. All right. Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein testified before the House Judiciary Committee today. And the timing of it last night, Department of Justice releasing hundreds of emails, text messages between FBI agents that showed, well, I just put it mildly, extreme bias against President Donald Trump, some of whom were involved in the investigation with Robert Mueller. Joining us now to give us more insight on today's hearing is Congressman Ted Poe of Texas. He represents the 2nd Congressional District of the Lone Star State and serves on the House Committee on the Judiciary. Congressman Poe, welcome back to Washington Watch. Do we get the Okay. Welcome back, Congressman, to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. Always good to talk to you.
Well, I was watching the hearing today, and I'm going to get to the subject. You had asked several questions regarding the release of confidential information that is gathered on American citizens, and this information being released or used improperly, wanting to know if the Department of Justice has actually prosecuted any of those individuals that has misused this information.
That's right. The information I'm talking about and I asked questions about had to do with the NSA gathering information in violation of the Constitution, in my opinion, emails on Americans, and then under this Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, continuing to seize information that's supposed to be gathered on terrorists. They gather, they say, incidentally, information on Americans, communications, emails, texts, and they use that against Americans. Now, they say they're operating within the law. I disagree. I think it violates the Constitution because no Fourth Amendment warrant is being used to gather that information on Americans. But the bottom line was, I want to know how many times this has been done. Give us a number. And we asked this first several years ago, and the Defense Department, intelligence agencies have all stonewalled that, given us that information, how many times this has occurred, the search of Americans' data. And even today, they say they can't give us that information. And we are going to have a vote on whether to reauthorize Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, and you know, I'm one that says we can't reauthorize it till we know how many times it's been used against Americans. So that was the tenor of my questions, and of course they continue to say we don't know, we don't have any idea. And I found that was
how is it that they don't know?
Well, I think they do know. I think that they can find out with a really they have the data. They can make a search. Their IT experts can make a search and figure that out, how many times they have flagged an American in that massive data they have. Even the Washington Post said that 90% of that data that's gathered, supposed to be against foreign terrorists, 90% of it's on somebody else, like Americans. So I wanted to know how the exact amount of times it's done, has been done, and They won't tell us. He didn't tell us, said he didn't know. That's been taken. The spy agencies have continued to say they don't have that information. They can't give it to us. I think they can.
So how this works, folks, is that when they're looking, tracking, investigating a foreign terrorist, if there is any communication with an American or American gets crossed up in that communication, they can get that information on that American. Now, it's incidental to the main investigation. And then that individual, if that information is presented, if I'm correct, Congressman Poe, that's masked so that people won't know who that individual is. But wasn't that at the center of part of this controversy with the Obama administration going out that they were unmasking some of these American citizens involved with the Trump campaign and what they thought was communication with foreign agents?
Exactly. That's all classified information. And we've heard of the leaks of information, who these people were, Americans that have been unmasked and their identities have been shown. And remember, some of these, the vast majority of these seizures on Americans may not have anything to do with terrorism. They may be communicating something else. And then they query this whole database on how many times this person's name, American, comes up, and then they look at that. But, yes, the unmasking is a felony. Wanted to know how many of those people have been prosecuted as well. And, of course, the investigation is still ongoing. That's basically what he said.
So, to our knowledge, no one has been prosecuted and convicted of misusing this information.
We're talking about several different types of searches. He did say that there were people who had been charged with violating unmasking, but he didn't say under what philosophy, what form that had been done. Mm. But to my knowledge, no one has been indicted for unmasking under 702 under the Foreign Surveillance Act.
And that is up for Congress to reauthorize.
That's right. It's got to be reauthorized by the end of the year, or it's not reauthorized. And that's where we are. And they're running out the clock by not telling us how many times Americans' names were searched in that database.
So there's a good chance if Congress knew the extent to which that was used or caught up Americans in that net, Congress might not reauthorize.
Absolutely. And I think that's why they're stonewalling giving us the information, is because it may be a lot of times they have searched the database on Americans.
Congressman Ted Poe, I want to shift gears a little bit to another aspect of the hearing that got a lot of attention based upon some text messages, information that was turned over on, last night turned over to the committee. Two FBI agents who were assigned to the investigation into the alleged collusion between President Donald Trump's campaign and Russia exchanged text messages back and forth, to take some of the more mild text message, referring to the future president as an idiot, expressing support for Hillary Clinton. This was a focus of a lot of the exchange today, was it not?
Absolutely. And it was the Republicans that were bringing this up. An independent counsel is appointed because current federal agencies, Justice Department, FBI, have a conflict of interest, or there is a perception of a conflict of interest, and that's why Mueller was appointed. And he is supposed to be independent. And those text messages show that the people who are helping the so-called independent investigator, Mueller, have a strong bias against President Trump. Those are two FBI agents, and the texts, I think, now are public, and there's a lot of them, that show just really a contempt and a hatred for the president. And they're involved in supposed to be the independent folks looking into this whole Russian Trump investigation shows absolutely that they are not independent. They are biased, and some of them gave contributions to Hillary Clinton's campaign, and it was pointed out because here's what we're doing: we're having independent counsel. They got FBI agents working with the so-called independent counsel, and these folks are obviously biased. It taints the investigation of Mueller, in my opinion, and that's why many members of the Judiciary Committee said, look, because of this, Mueller should not be the independent counsel. We need somebody else to be the independent counsel. And that's where all of this was leading to.
Yeah, there's about 375 texts that were handed over to by the Justice Department to the House Judiciary Committee last night. Obviously, not a whole lot of time to look through those before the hearing. But the two agents, Lisa Page and Peter Strzok, it was very clear the bias, as you said, extreme bias against the president. Now, members calling for a second special counsel. What are the chances that we might see that happen?
I don't see it happening right now. Rosenstein made it pretty clear that he does not want and think that there should be another special counsel. So we haven't succeeded in getting that yet. I hope we do.
Now, both of these, both these agents are no longer on the investigation.
That's correct.
But was there questions regarding other agents and the biased nature that might still be among these investigators?
If I recall all the questions and the answers, the general tenor was based on these two agents, and the questions had to do with how can we trust the Justice Department independent counsel because of this? And the bottom line answer was, well, you can trust us because we are not going to use these agents. We will be independent. We will not let people have their bias in the investigation. So now that's the Justice Department's position. We will be fair. That was their answer. And there are still
members
were concerned about that they don't already trust the Justice Department or the independent counsel, I should say.
And do you believe that?
Well, I'm suspect of the FBI, who had the greatest reputation in law enforcement in the world ever since Comey and his shenanigans about how he did things, and the Justice Department going all the way back to Eric Holder and the way he made it a political entity. So I personally am suspect, and I think the way to remove any suspicion about being independent is to just give the American public another special counsel to investigate all of this information. That's my opinion, but I think we need one. So I'm very still suspicious of what is taking place.
There are so many holdovers and so many people. Well, I know there was at least eight political appointees from the Obama administration that are now embedded. They went over to classified, and then who knows how many others that were hired during the Obama regime. And so there's reason, I think, to be suspect, even though I think the Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, is doing a great job with his core team. There's a lot of stuff that has to be undone. Congressman Ted Poe, thanks so much for joining us and giving us the update on today's hearing.
And thank you. And I just want to be clear that I'm suspicious of the independence of the counsel. I'm not talking about Jeff Sessions and the rest of the Justice Department, just the independent counsel.
Yeah. All right. Merry Christmas, my friend. Folks, don't go away. We're back after this.
This Christmas season, give with purpose and meaning, a gift that protects life, marriage, and religious liberty. At Family Research Council, our mission is to promote these three core values in public policy and the culture from a Christian worldview. We are working to ensure that our religious liberty is defended in the public square, that human life at all stages is protected, and that family values are promoted in our country's public policies. Your giving can make an eternal difference for your community and for our future generations. And if you give between now and December 31st to Family Research Council, your gift will be matched, meaning it will be doubled by a generous donor. And any donation is tax deductible. Give with purpose this Christmas season. Text FRC to 444-999. Again, that is text FRC to 444-999. Thank you for standing with us. FRC wishes you and your family a Merry Christmas and a blessed New Year. Having a hard time finding that right gift for your family and friends? Need some ideas? Check out Family Research Council's online store and browse the latest books, mugs, trendy t-shirts, baby bibs, tote bags, and more. Your purchase of these items will support FRC in our mission to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and the culture from a Christian worldview. Some of our exclusive items include a unique in-house design DC t-shirt featuring a skyline of the monuments in our nation's capital, a cute baby bib with some pro-life flair, and a stylish tote bag with a Bible verse from 1 John 4:19 that says, "We love because He first loved us." Go to frc.org/store now to start shopping. Again, that is frc.org/store. Thank you for standing with us. FRC wishes you and your family a very Merry Christmas and a blessed New Year.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As senior director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discusses the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Thanks for joining us. Hey, let me remind you, between now and the end of the year, if you'd like to partner with the Family Research Council, which brings you Washington Watch, we receive no government money, no advertising dollars, all listeners supported. If you want to partner with us, anything you give between now and the end of the year will be matched by a generous donor. You can call anytime during today's program, 800-225-4008, 800-225-4008, to partner with us. All right, I just want to make as I was talking with Congressman Poe, we were discussing the special counsel, which is separate from, in this investigation from the Department of Justice, the FBI, the Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, recusing himself from that investigation. So that's why the special counsel was put in place. So it's the special counsel that's compromised. The point I was making there at the end is that even within the Department of Justice, there are holdovers from the Obama administration which are plaguing even the Department of Justice and the FBI. And there's cleanup both within the special counsel, which needs to be investigated, but even continuing trying to clean up the mess created by the Obama administration, the lawlessness that was unleashed by the Obama administration, Eric Holder and crew. So anyway, that was the point. Okay, on Monday, a federal judge ruled that the Pentagon must begin recruiting transgendered people into the military beginning January the 1st. Now, this comes despite the fact that President Trump said, "We're changing policies. I don't feel that this is in the best interest of our nation's military or those who serve in our military." He announced that in July, but a federal judge has said they know better than the commander-in-chief what our military needs. And so the Department of Defense has announced that they will begin training 23,000 members of the military, not for war, not to protect America, but to carry out this Obama-era policy. Joining us now is Evan Wilt, reporter with World Magazine that has been tracking this story. Evan, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Yeah, good to be with you, Tony. Thanks for having me on.
Well, this clearly I would think would be a challenge to the president's ability to be the commander in chief, where you have a federal judge saying, no, we're this program, this policy that was put in motion by the previous administration must be carried out.
Right. Well, I think a lot of what's happening in this process is there's just a lot of question marks. At the end of the day, the Obama administration in 2016 changed the ban on transgender military service members and put a process in having a day for them to be active serving members of the military. So when President Trump released his tweet in July saying that they would no longer be able to be in the military, he basically stopped that from happening. There's a lot of questions about how many transgender service members are there even in the military right now, how many want to be in the military. The numbers are kind of all over the place. The only actual commissioned study from the Defense Department listed about somewhere between 1,300 people to 6,000 in the military right now, and that's out of 1.3 million full-time soldiers. So there's a lot of questions here, and I think the courts are trying to make a decision with incomplete data.
Right. Part of it is the incomplete data. There's also information to suggest that Ash Carter, who was Secretary of Defense at the time this policy was unilaterally adopted, did not allow all of the agencies to fully express their concern, the various branches. And that was a part of the president saying, no, we're not going to do this because the military leadership that I've spoken to said this is problematic. I mean, what are we talking about in terms of cost here? Let's just start with the 23,000 military personnel that are going to have to be trained on how to bring these individuals into the military. I mean, that's going to cost something, and it's certainly going to be a trade-off for other training or activities they could be involved in.
Right. Well, I mean, as you know, the U.S. military is the most powerful and one of the most well-funded in the entire world. And, we spend close to $700 billion a year on the military. But, that is for this explicit purpose of keeping Americans safe. The costs involved here, you have thousands of recruiters across the country who are going to have to get some training. And basically what that training means is that when you have, starting January 1, unless something else changes, you're going to have, theoretically you're going to have transgender people going to a recruiting office and saying, I want to join the military. And you have to have a recruiting, they have to be training about how do you deal with that? How do you explain what that means for them being in the military? How do you explain health concerns and everything else that goes into that? So I think the cost of that is not really determined yet. I think there's also the cost of the military paying for people in the military to transition to a different gender. The estimates I've seen that cost the military somewhere between $2.4 million to $8.4 million each year. So I think that's a lot of money that taxpayers have to pay for.
And it is a, it redirects that money to other places, I mean, from other places, such as military equipment and training for, military assignments. As this federal judge has now stepped in and made this ruling, I think the Department of Justice is seeking an expedited ruling to appeal this. How might this play out from this point?
Well, we don't really know at this point. So we had the ruling on Monday, and then the Pentagon said that they were going to abide by that ruling, and basically they just didn't have a choice. A federal judge says you have to allow transgender military service members to enlist. The Pentagon is going to follow that. So what the Justice Department did under President Trump was appeal that ruling. They asked for a delay in it happening. So that's still underway. I know that Defense Secretary Jim Mattis is currently doing a study to look at all these issues and advise the president on best policies going forward. But that's not slated to end until February 21st of next year.
All right. Evan Wilt, thank you so much for joining us today here on Washington Watch.
Yeah, thank you. Merry
Christmas. To find out more about Evan and the work there with World Magazine, go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. All right, when we come back, our own Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin joins us to continue this conversation on the impact that this decision by a judge, a federal judge, could have upon military readiness and effectiveness. That's next. Don't go away.
Spend a semester in Washington, D.C. with Family Research Council through our internship program. You will get a chance to experience the rich history and culture of our nation's capital and be immersed in the most important political debates of our day by working to advance family values in a professional work environment under the oversight and mentorship of FRC experts and scholars. The internship program includes free housing just a block away from Capitol Hill and the Supreme Court, as well as a paid stipend. Learn more at frc.org/internships.
Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Ornakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers. The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right, I want to stay on this issue because it's a very significant issue, and it's going to require your participation. Look, men and women who are in the military, they surrender certain abilities to speak. And so they oftentimes can't talk about the publicly about the policies that negatively impact them. And that's one of the reasons we are here, especially when it comes to the impact upon religious freedom. But also, our men and women serve in our nation's military for a purpose. Our military has a mission. It is to fight and win America's wars. It is not to be lab rats in these great social experiments that liberals want to do. And that is exactly what Barack Obama did with our nation's military. I mean, the historical record from his own people said the only time he was interested in the Department of Defense and what was going on over there was when it pertained to either repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell or one of his other social experiments that he put upon the military. President Trump, in part, committed to undo these things. In fact, at a gathering of retired military officers, my next guest and I interviewed the president, then candidate, Donald Trump, asking a series of questions of him. And one of the things he made very clear was that he was going to end the social experiments that were being put upon our nation's military and return them to their main mission of fighting and winning wars. Joining me now is our own Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, Executive Vice President here at the Family Research Council and a founding member of the Delta Force and 36 and a half years in the United States Army. General, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, the president made very clear when he was running as a candidate that he was going to return our military to what it should be.
He certainly did. He gave us that pledge as we sat there at the Westin Hotel with him in October of 2016.
So you and I were not surprised in July when he made the announcement that we were not going to do, our military was not going to do this transgender thing.
No, I would say it was not just a matter of not being surprised, but we were expecting it.
So you have a few folks that file suit in a federal court saying that he can't do that, that transgendered persons have a right to serve in our nation's military. And so you have a federal judge, Judge Colleen Collar Cotel, issuing an order saying, no, you got to go forward with it. The Trump administration appealing to get a stay on that decision until, they could appeal, the appeal could work its way out. She again said, no, there is another expedited request appeal by the Trump administration to put this on hold until they can fully adjudicate it in court. Bottom line, what is the impact that this could have on our nation's military?
Well, let me start by saying there's so many things wrong with what you just said. The first one is this is judicial tyranny. This is absolute judicial tyranny. Donald Trump was elected fairly, so this is tyranny by an unelected lower court official. And I find that just incredible. The second thing, though, is nobody has the right to serve in the military. There is no constitutional right. It is a privilege to be able to serve in the military. The military has always had policies that restricted some people from serving, but it was because their service was either jeopardized them personally right. or jeopardized their teammates if they had certain physical or health issues associated with them. And then finally, your question, what's the impact of this? You said it, just like Douglas MacArthur did in 1963 at the West Point Mess Hall. He said, your mission is fixed, determined, inviolable. It's to win the nation's wars. That has not changed. Everything that the Congress does and everything the President does should be done with regards to our military with a view towards how this makes us more capable of doing that. What we're seeing now is that we're seeing another social experiment thrust into our military, which will eat up training time, will take time that they should be preparing to win the nation's wars. And it will be hours of training time. And, Tony, as I mentioned to you earlier this morning, if you're in the National Guard or you're in the reserves, you're going to spend entire drill periods. That's a weekend a month. You're going to spend entire periods doing nothing but catching up on all these social experiments. You're going to sit in a classroom. You're not going to the range. You're not going to be doing physical training. You're not going to be driving a tank or a personnel carrier. You are going to be sitting in a classroom learning about how you're supposed to treat transgenders or homosexuals, or how you're supposed to integrate women into the infantry, or how you're supposed to do a variety of other things that contribute absolutely nothing to winning the nation's wars. Yes, I'm fired up about it.
Once you learn how to do all that stuff, there's nothing, I mean, it's meaningless to try to win a war because you don't know how to fight. We're up against a break. Hold on there, General. I'm going to come back and finish this conversation. Folks, don't go away. We're going to come back on the other side of this break, finish my conversation with the general, and then we're going to be taking your phone calls here on Washington Watch. Is this something you would like to see the president fight and stop? That's what we're going to talk about today. Don't go away. We're back with more after this.
Are you interested in making a real impact in public policy and culture? And are you looking for an internship experience at a Christian organization in the heart of our nation's capital? If the answer is yes, spend a semester in Washington, D.C. with Family Research Council through our internship program. You will get a chance to experience our country's rich history and culture and be immersed in the most important political debates of our day. Further, you will develop the skills required to advance faith, family, and freedom in our nation. Family Research Council's internship program includes free housing just a block away from Capitol Hill and the Supreme Court, as well as a paid stipend. As an intern, you will gain an invaluable public policy experience in a professional work environment under the oversight and mentorship of FRC experts and scholars. Learn more about the FRC internship program at frc.org/internships. Again, that is frc.org/internships.
Having a hard time finding that right gift for your family and friends? Need some ideas? Check out Family Research Council's online store and browse the latest books, mugs, trendy t-shirts, baby bibs, tote bags, and more. Your purchase of these items will support FRC in our mission to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and the culture from a Christian worldview. Some of our exclusive items include a unique in-house design DC t-shirt featuring a skyline of the monuments in our nation's capital, a cute baby bib with some pro-life flair, and a stylish tote bag with a Bible verse from 1 John 4:19 that says, "We love because He first loved us." Go to frc.org/store now to start shopping. Again, that is frc.org/store. Thank you for standing with us. FRC wishes you and your family a very Merry Christmas and a blessed New Year.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God. But culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas everywhere you go.
Please, please, General, don't sing. Don't
take
sing.
Take a look
right
in the 5 and 10.
You're not Bing Crosby. What? Okay.
Right. I can sound just like him.
You don't look like him.
No.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon.
I forgot.
It's been a long week. All right, folks, we're going to go to the phones here in just a moment, but I want to finish my conversation here with the general regarding this order by a federal judge, a Clinton appointee, Judge Colleen Collar-Cotel, I believe that's how she pronounces her name, with the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia. And they venue shopped for this, the opponents of the president's order stopping the previous administration's social policy. But general, as we've looked at it, 23,000 personnel are going to have to be trained by the end of the year. That's resources that are going to have to be reallocated. I mean, you just can't create this out of thin air. That takes time away. And the point you were making is that this is not happening in a vacuum. This is on top of other training that the Obama administration made the military go into. How do you deal with homosexuals? How do you deal with sexual abuse? How do you deal with, I mean, all of these
women
issues.
Women in the infantry. Yeah, no, this is added on top of what we're already doing on these social experiments.
So the practical effect of that, what is it? Can we say that this has had an impact?
Oh, listen, just watch the news. How many ships have collided in the last 2 years? Just in the last 2 years, how many ships have collided at sea? How many airplanes have crashed? Just look at the impact of using our training time for these social experiments instead of doing those things that help us to succeed in war and keep our people alive. You're seeing this. Even the Navy is now saying that a lot of these ship collisions now are based on a lack of training, a lack of preparation. And look at those sailors that were taken in 2016, in January 2016, that were taken by the Iranians, and within 3 hours, apologizing to the Iranians and thanking them for their hospitality. You know, the code of conduct does not permit that. But guess what? They didn't get the code of conduct. Why? Because they were in a classroom learning how to integrate homosexuals and transgenders and women into the infantry and a variety of other things that contributed nothing to their preparation for going into harm's way. That's the impact of this, and it's not right. It is unjust for us to send our sons and daughters into combat, put them in harm's way to do the nation's work, and not prepare them and equip them properly.
So it's endangering their lives.
Absolutely, it's endangering their lives. I mean, look, you got ships that are colliding at sea, obviously because they're not prepared, and we're killing people
and sailors
in the process.
Are dying. Sailors That's are right. dying as a result of that. And again, President Trump saw this. This was communicated by current and former military leaders to the president. The cost of this was evaluated by him, you know, upwards of, I think, $7 billion over a 10-year period. And he said, we're not going to do this.
Right.
But yet now we have a federal judge that is dictating the policy of our nation's mm-hmm. military.
That's why I say it's judicial tyranny. I mean, I never thought I'd see the day when an unelected lower court judge could have that kind of authority. This is about America's security. You know, that's the mission, again, of the military is to win our wars. This is about national security, and you have a monumental decision here that is being made by an unelected lower court judge that impacts on our national security. But more importantly, you got a son that's about to go in the military, don't
right.
you?
I do.
Do you?
And
you're
I mentioned
like every
that,
other mom and dad.
And when I talked to the president about this on Monday in the Oval Office, and I told him, I said, you know, I'm concerned about this for a variety of reasons. One is the impact it has on our nation's military, but the fact that my son is taking the oath on Friday.
Yeah. And don't you think we owe it to him? I know you do. I know because you and I've talked about it. But we owe it to him and everybody else just like him to give them the best preparation by training them properly and equipping them properly and not wasting their time on these nonsensical right. things that contribute nothing to the readiness of our military.
And if this is allowed to continue, what is actually going to happen? And you and I have talked about this as well, because every time you and I go somewhere and we speak, we have parents that come mm-hmm. up to us and say, yeah. Should I allow my son, my daughter yeah. to join the military mm-hmm. given what is taking right. place? And I think if we continue down this path, more and more God-fearing, patriotic Americans mm-hmm. are not going to serve in our nation's military.
And then what do you have, Tony? What you have is you have mercenaries. I mean, if you lose the element of faith in the ranks of our military, I don't know where it could wind up. But you don't want a military where there's not some foundation of faith among a good number of those soldiers, sailors, airmen, right. or Marines. You need faith in there.
George Washington made that very yep. clear. That is the moral compass.
That's exactly right. And if you don't have that, look, bad things happen anyhow. But you're talking about some really bad things.
Right.
When you don't have at least some foundation of faith, and you've got people that are trained, that are well-armed, my gosh, think of where this could go. And so that's not what we need. We've got to restore our military readiness, and part of that is stopping this very dangerous policy that this judge has ruled on.
All right, General Jerry Boykin, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Okay, good to be with you.
I go down to the gym and work out, all right?
All right, thanks.
All right, folks, 866-372-7234, the number to call to get in on the conversation. But I want to give you another number to call because I want you as well to weigh in with the White House. They have a comment line and call and encourage the president to stand firm on this, to stop this policy, to make sure it doesn't happen, keep our men and the women and the military strong, you know, whatever you want to say. But let me give you that comment line, 202-456-1111, 202-456-1111. The president wants to hear from you. And it would be very helpful if you can call. Just call, leave a message, 202-456-1111. 11. All right, let's go to Baton Rouge, where Ricky is on the line. Ricky, welcome to Washington Watch.
Yes, sir. Washington, we just like President Andrew Jackson, the Commander-in-Chief, the Supreme Court said you cannot remove the Cherokee engine. And Andrew Jackson said, really? Watch and see us do it. And he did it. Trump is the Commander-in-Chief. He's the one that issues the lawful constitutional orders, not a judge issuing unconstitutional, unlawful orders. What's the judge going to do? Send two U.S. Marshals to arrest Donald Trump for contempt of court? No, she can't do nothing. So Trump should just ignore the order and give his commands to his troops. Duh.
All right, Ricky, thank you for the call. Interesting, Andrew Jackson, I was noticing in the Oval Office the other day that the president has a portrait of Andrew Jackson in the Oval Office, has a miniature bust of Andrew Jackson, obviously a fan of President Andrew Jackson. So maybe, who knows? Ricky, maybe you'll take his cues from Andrew Jackson. I do think that this, in my view, it's one of those areas where if you're going to have a constitutional crisis, this is one of those things you have to determine who is in control of our nation's military. It's the commander-in-chief. Look, Barack Obama did what he wanted to do unilaterally. In fact, this policy did not come from Congress. This policy came from Barack Obama and his Secretary of Defense. This president, who is rational and reasonable when it comes to our nation's military and what is right and understands the military's mission, is saying, we're not going to do it. But yet you have a Clinton-appointed judge who is dead set on continuing legacy of Barack Obama. All right, let's go to Dallas, Texas, where Rick is on the line. Rick, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, old Tony.
Go ahead, Rick. Yeah, how you doing?
Hey, I'm good. I'm a Navy veteran. I served on the aircraft carrier two tours in Vietnam. And I cannot imagine being in a situation having to deal with all of this, considering what it was like 12 hours a day, 7 days a week for months on end. It's just mind-boggling. And the president has every right to do what he deems necessary. Keep the U.S. safe.
Well, Rick, thank you for your service, and thank you for calling in and weighing in on this topic. And folks, I would encourage you to call the White House comment line, 202-456-1111. Let the president know you want him to fight this, to stand firm and not allow it to happen. They're looking for, in addition to the judicial remedies here, but also a legislative fix, trying to fix this thing. But look, I just think the president needs to stand firm and send a very strong message that he is not going to allow a federal judge to run our nation's military. Rick, thanks so much for the call. Let's go to Pennsylvania, where Dan is on the line. Dan, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, good afternoon, Tony. I appreciate taking my call. I spent 28 years in the Air Force, a veteran, obviously, and I think the precedents have been set by former presidents. A gentleman earlier mentioned Andrew Jackson, also President Lincoln with the Dred Scott case. He decided to emancipate slaves and ignore a Supreme Court opinion, which was subsequently overturned by another Supreme Court. The Constitution appoints the president as commander-in-chief of the military. We have three separate branches in the federal government. The executive branch is in charge of the military, and Congress makes the laws for the military through the Uniform Code of Military Justice. And I believe that the president should fight this. He has every right to ignore the judicial branch and do exactly what he has done already with his executive order and not allow transgenders to serve in the military. The general's absolutely right. It's not a right to serve our military. It's a privilege. So yep. I really want President Trump to fight this.
All right, Dan. Thank you for your service, and thanks for your call. And let me be very, very clear about this. where the administration stands. This is a lower court judge, not even an appellate court. It's a lower court judge who made this decision. And what the administration is asking for is, as they appeal the ruling, they're saying, all right, look, can we just stay the lower court decision while we appeal and try to win this judicial case? So they're wanting to play by, quote-unquote, the court's rules, but they're simply saying, look, we need to get a stay on this. We can't be forced to implement this policy come January 1st and then still be able to address it later, because once you open this door, you've opened it. I mean, once the genie's out of the bottle, can't get it back in. All right, I'm going to take another call here before we run out of time. Let's go to Mitch in Kansas. Mitch, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you. You know, I think one of the big problems we have here that goes way beyond the immediate issue is that two branches of the government bow the knee to the judicial system, which does not have any constitutional authority at all over those other two branches of government. So these judges have taken power that's not granted them, and the other two branches, if I were the president, I would say, thank you for your opinion. However, I am not subject to your ruling, and continue on regardless of what the court does. Forget the appeal. Just tell them they can't say that, or they can't do that.
Yeah. Well, I think you are correct, Mitch, from a standpoint of when the three branches of government, the judicial branch, according to the founders, was the weakest of the three. No question about it. And it does not none of the three prevail over the others. That's why it's divided government. It's supposed to be checks and balances on all. I think we got to be very careful. I don't want to just say that we ignore the courts, but this is a lower court ruling. And what the lower court is doing in this decision and refusing to stay the decision until it can be completely adjudicated is forcing a lower court. I mean, this is what's happening. A lower-level judge is deciding the policy for our nation's military. That is a very, very dangerous precedent. Now, I would agree that I think at this point, if the president is forced to either carry out this policy that is being forced upon him by a lower court judge or ignore that lower court judge and say, no, we're not going to do it until we finish. I think this is one of the cases to bring about the conflict with the court because I do not think a lower court judge should be dictating our military policy. Mitch, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate you listening. Sorry we're not going to get to the rest of the calls, just about out of time. But Lord willing, we'll be back tomorrow, and I hope you will as well. Again, call that Capitol, the White House comment line, 202-546-1111. All right. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians chapter 6, where it says, when you've done everything that you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.